What is up, everyone? Welcome back to Coaches to the Moon. My guest today, Walt Morgan out of Colorado, is the founder of Translational Lift Coaching, which is a helicopter analogy that we can discuss at a later date. But that is fitting because Walt himself spent 23 years in the Navy as a helicopter pilot and is now running a coaching business, helping people from all walks of life to progress in their leadership, their development, and as we dig into it, really whichever area of their life or career they most feel needs help. Now, Walt has some really interesting strategies around how he takes on clients, how he approaches promotion and sales, and also how he approaches how much financial gain he wants to make in a year. And I think there's some really refreshing insights in this chat about how to run a coaching business, how to know what is your level of success, what is your own definition of success, and when to start pushing for more and when to pull back. Really grounded, really calm chat with a guy who I was super interested to talk to for longer. We actually tipped the hour mark on this episode, and I could have gone for a lot longer if we dug into his past in the Navy, but we'll have him back on for that one. For today, we're talking coaching, leadership, development, sales, promotion, everything you're here for, guys. I cannot wait to show you this episode. Here he is, everyone, Walt Morgan on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast, ladies and gentlemen, heading transatlantic today over to Boulder, Colorado, where my guest today, Walt Morgan, is currently residing. Walt is a professional integral coach, something that he's described to me and will describe again to everyone on the show. He works in leadership and development, and something I'm very interested in as well, spent 23 years as a helicopter pilot in the Navy, and I guess he's borrowed the headset from the Navy and still using it today. You're a man who's very comfortable in headphones, mate. So grateful to have you here today, Walt.
Alex, it's so good to be here. And I just want to say thank you for the service that you offer to coaches everywhere. You know, as somebody, as a coach who is also learning the business on the go, what you provide and the perspectives that you offer are incredibly important to all of us. So I'm grateful for you.
Thank you, mate. Well, I only know what I know, right? And so I've got to consistently be speaking to people to expand that knowledge, because it's very easy to, you know, get the blinkers on, right? And just stay in your own little tunnel. And for me to just focus on the ads that we run or just focus on my own business, it's challenging to consistently talk to people like yourself. Sometimes I agree with people, sometimes I disagree. And I think that makes me a better coach, and also a bit selfish because I'm using your expertise for my social media content without having to think of anything. But no, I'm glad to hear you say that, mate. You mentioned that you coach coaches, and you've seen a few patterns. One that I thought was really interesting, let's just dig straight into it, was you used two terms, transformational versus transactional. And you said that some coaches may be comfortable in the transformational space, but not the transactional space. Could you dig into that a little more for us, please?
Yeah, and I can really start speaking with the eye, not just coaches that I've coached, but in my own life. Like, I am so passionate around the coaching. I step into every coaching engagement with the full faith and trust that there will be a profound transformation in another human's life. And I get really excited about that. And that's the work that I do. And that's why I do it. And then there's also this thing where this is how I make my living. And the money part of coaching is quite transactional. So for somebody who really leans into the transformation, just the idea of asking for money for something that is so personally fulfilling feels a little misplaced. But I actually have found a little bit in my own business, a unique way around that, I think.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'd love to hear it, because you're totally right. People come into the space. I myself as well started out coaching. I was health and nutrition coaching, and I was doing that online. I had programs helping primarily women to form more of a sustainable path to health and weight loss. I wasn't very good at the 12-week booty boot camp sort of thing. I was like, let's make a change that their kids will feel in 20 years' time. Let's talk about cooking. Let's talk about, you know, sustainable daily levels of exercise. And I had this program, which I thought was really cool. And I find myself talking on the phone back before we did everything on Zoom, speaking to women who were like really emotional about what would happen if they didn't, you know, sort out their health and that sort of thing. And it's like, I know you're crying, Deborah. Now is the time when I, you know, this is $2,200. And you're completely right. It feels like a very, you want to just help these people and say, okay, I'll do this for free right now because you need it. But you're also doing them a disservice because, as we know, if we're doing something for free, we're probably not going to put as much effort into it. Maybe the rare person does, but it's very difficult to commit yourself to something that you've not invested in.
And also the clients themselves are less likely to lean into the engagement if they don't have that skin in the game. I think it's easier to get a $10,000 client than it is to get a free client, to be honest. It's important for them.
I agree.
It's part of their value.
I never had any success in network marketing when it was kind of like your $80 supplements, that sort of thing. But I've never, well, I have struggled, but I've always found it easier to do, higher ticket, longer term program than to sell someone on the benefits of this particular, you know, bottle of protein shake, that sort of thing. So yeah, let's talk about how you've started to approach that in your own coaching business.
Yeah. And I'm also going to contradict myself in a few minutes. So I just want to set that up. So when it happens, nobody's going to be that surprised. So here's how I structured my business. I have named what is enough for me financially. I know what's enough. I say, this is my cap. This is enough. And financially, what's enough for me is a little bit more than I need, but probably a lot less than I want, right? But to clearly define it and say, for our family's quality of life, to do the things that we want to do, to live the way that we want to live, this is enough. And by being able to name that, it reduces for me the temptation to chase the money. I know what enough is, and I'm not going to go above that. But it does something else for me that's really important. It does a couple of things. One is it allows me to focus on impact, right? So I have kind of two constants in my business. One constant is that enoughness financially. This is how much money I want to make each year. And then the other is the number of clients. I want to coach 24 clients each year. That's my, you know, six-month contracts is how I approach coaching. I think 6 months is pretty close consistently to that transformation where you can kind of push them out of the nest and allow them to be sustainable and independent on their own with sufficient choice to continue to grow. So 24 clients and then the financial enoughness. Those are the two constants. So what this enables me to do is to really try to get the money up front. So charge more for those clients, because if I can make my enough money, if I can make my self-imposed cap on my earnings in 15 clients, guess what? That leaves nine clients that, here comes the contradiction, that leaves nine clients that I can coach pro bono or reduced fee. And the big idea there is that allows me to really be intentional around the impact that I'm making through coaching by really finding clients that I want to serve in their journey, because their journey feels particularly important to me and it feels particularly useful to support them because of the impact that they're making through their lives and through their leadership.
I think that's a wonderful system. And I don't think it feels that contradictory. Except for the fact that you mentioned that, some clients may not take things as seriously, but it also feels a bit like maybe we all want to be charitable. We all want to give a little back. And we have a lot of charitable incentives with my company, because I think there's a bit of a, you know, middle class guilt from just kind of my kids always having food and warmth, that sort of thing, and knowing that so many do not. But you can't do that without taking care of your own stuff first, I feel. Right. So I like your system because it does put a cap on when your needs are taken care of, because it can feel very easy, I suppose, in this world of Instagram and seeing the gurus more to think like, yeah, I could do something for impact, or I could invest a little more and be closer to the new car, that sort of thing. Right. So I think that's a really beautiful and grounded system, Walt Morgan. And I dare say something that a younger man wouldn't have come up with. I think it's you've got to really know what you want. Not that you're not a younger man anymore, but I know that you're at least 23 from your years in the military. But that's really cool, man. That's really cool. So 24 clients in 6 month programs. So we've got 2024 coming up. Are you now actively looking for these clients to fill those first 15 spots now? And how do you go about that?
Yeah. So I used to get really stressed about that, and it's not perfect. Like in a perfect world, I pick up two new clients a month and I complete two new clients a month. It is not like that. There is a roller coaster to this business that I have learned, where sometimes it's just like, this is the greatest year ever. Like, I might have an opening for you in 6 months, and then other months it's just crickets. So one, accepting for me at least that there's a cycle to this has been important in the business, accepting it with faith. Look, I will say to you, I'll say to all your coaches out there, keep doing this beautiful work. If this is what you're really called to do, please do it. I'm doing this because I believe that it's changing the world. At first, one person at a time, but I'm feeling called more deeply to do something more at scale. And so I'm exploring that. But keep changing the world in this beautiful way. The work you do is so important. So if this is what you're supposed to do, please do it. And please have faith that this works out. The business side for me isn't always easy. I'll share a story if it's okay. It's a bit of a firsthand and a secondhand story. And it goes like this. When I first put out my shingle as a coach, so the really quick background that I'd share with your audience, if they don't know, you mentioned I was a Navy helicopter pilot. So I was in the Navy for 23 years, did that, felt this calling at the end of it. While most of my squadron mates were going to the airlines to fly, and while others were going to defense consulting, I just felt this calling to do something in leadership development. I didn't know what that was. But I followed it. I branded myself as a leadership development specialist. I got picked up by a corporate Fortune 200 company, and they really had this beautiful approach to leadership development. They had this beautiful approach to coaching. I grew so much personally in that role, emotionally and spiritually, particularly. And that brought me into a certain readiness to be a coach. They also sent me to my first integral coaching program. And as soon as I was there, I knew, oh, I am supposed to be an integral coach. That's what the nudge from the universe was. That's very clear to me. And that's what I'll do for the rest of my life. So I left that corporation after they got me some coaching training. And I did pay for the next round myself. And as I was leaving, a coaching company accidentally hired me. And I'm not joking when I say that. There was an accident. They hired me, and I got really lucky there. And then they began to give me a steady supply of clients, good clients, pretty well-paying clients. So I'm like, okay, this is it. I've made it. This is all there is to it. I just have a good partner and allow them to sell me and coach the executives typically that they bring me, and we're good. And after maybe 8 months of that, the head of sales left that business. And all of a sudden I realized that I'd lost my advocate and I wasn't getting the clients. And I had a really, really tough time there for a while. I wasn't getting any clients for months, no clients. And I tried Google Ads and poured this money into Google Ads and was fine tuning my SEO and got zero clients from that effort. And my theory around that is, man, if you're looking for a plumber, Google Ads is great because you need a plumber now. But if you're like, if you're searching for a coach on Google, man, that's step one of 73, right? You're not going to call that coach whose ad comes up is my suspicion. But anyway, for me, and maybe it was a fault of my website or whatever, I didn't get business from that. So at that time, I called one of my classmates from at my first integral coaching series. And he was different than the rest of us. Like he had the kind of business side wired. You could just tell.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, man, what's the secret here? And he said, you know what? I initially read The Prosperous Coach and I did everything there. And I tried to have 50 engagements a week, knowing that each of those, like every 50 engagements would lead to one client. And he said, I was killing myself. And he said, I then was getting frustrated that my life felt in tension with my family and with coaching the business. And he was frequently irritated by that. That he always felt like he should have been doing more for the business. And he was heading out on a run. He was training for a marathon and he was heading out on a run. And he said to himself, you know what? My life doesn't have to be in tension. I can run and find new clients. This doesn't have to be like this frustrating thing. I'm just going to go for a run and I'm going to find a client. So he went on his run and he just kind of opened himself to the possibility of business. Just kind of asked the question, where is the next person who's excited to be coached by me? Where's that person going to come from? Who are they? Because the universe, the world is full of people who would benefit from us and might even actively be looking. So he went on the run. He's running by a billboard and he saw a name on the billboard. I don't remember the name. We'll say it's Kelly. And he's like, oh, Kelly. He was just drawn to the name, Kelly. He's like, I don't know anybody named Kelly. I don't know why I was drawn to that. Running along, he's like, oh, I do know Kelly. I do know a Kelly. First thing he did when he got back from his run, he called Kelly and Kelly was his next client. So
yeah.
If you would have told me that story 10 years ago, I would have laughed at you.
Yeah.
But in my own personal journey and my own personal experience and my own ability to listen in new ways and to feel new things and allow my body to be an instrument, a sensory, you know, something sensory to something larger that connects me to something else, that story makes perfect sense to me now.
Right.
Again, 10 years ago, not so much. But now, yes, that makes perfect sense. Opening ourselves up to possibilities where our clients come from.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me that story. I thought it was powerful. I thought it was profound. The next week I got a $20,000 client on a ski lift next week. And I'm like, okay, and that was the beginning of a great year, right? So that was like from April 22 to April 23. It just all kicked off. It all just kicked off right then with this new kind of openness to the universe that I developed. And I would say now in this roller coaster of things, it's down at the moment, but my response is very different than it was a few years ago. It's like, okay, I mean, I got a great new client last week. I've got a really promising conversation tomorrow. This all works out the way it's supposed to. Because I'm doing the work that I'm supposed to, and I'm making myself increasingly open to who is looking for coaching and being available to that. At the end of the day, I'm never selling. I'm only offering.
That's a very big That's a very big switch. Lots of stuff to unpack in that story, I guess, but that's a very big switch, isn't it? That go from looking at your business as you are selling coaching to you're offering a solution and then kind of helping people come on board. It's selling can become a big triggering word for a lot of people who maybe just want to be helping. So that's great. Okay. And I think as you get further into business, you know, you have the good months and the bad months, the good years and the bad years. And I think your capacity for, what's that word? The capacity for the roller coaster, I guess, you know, gets bigger. Your capacity for dealing mm-hmm. with tougher times and for better times and for, you know, when I was younger and I used to get, I'd have an upfront sale into my coaching business, I would go and spend it. And then now, knowing that, you know, if I have bigger days now than I used to have years back in, you know, when I was in my health coaching business. And it's just knowing that this is a good thing, but this is also not always going to be forever as well. And having the groundedness to prepare for the slower times and know that you're just in seasons, sometimes where you have to invest more, sometimes where you have to pull back. And that only really comes with time and experience, I suppose. But well, I was going to just say that what interests me is I would imagine that your experience in the military probably gave you a level of resilience or, you know, being used to risk more than the average person. And I'm curious as to whether or not you believe that the training and the exposure to adversity that you get in the military does in fact have an effect on the way you approach your business.
No, that's a really thoughtful question. One, I want to be really upfront. Something it did provide was a pension, right? So for all of my glorious risk taking mm-hmm. and putting it out there and listening to the universe, yep. let's also say that my runway was lengthened a little bit right. by having some income, right? That has allowed me to take certain risks. But as far as how I show up, it's interesting because I feel like the last 7 years since I retired from the Navy has really been transcending my military experience to form mm-hmm. something new, almost to discover what perhaps was lost during that time by playing mm-hmm. very, very specific roles in very, very specific ways, which is what gave me pause when you asked that question. And I think if I'm being honest, that yes, absolutely, the lessons of the military gave me some faith and confidence in the ambiguity. I have a friend in the Washington, D.C. area. He's a headhunter in the sense that he connects talent with jobs, but he spends a lot of time in the offices of CEOs of our nation's largest banks, right? Mm-hmm. He is at that level. And what those people tell him is strategy is not our problem. Mm-hmm. People to execute strategy is our problem. Yeah. People who are willing to work in the ambiguity with confidence. And my friend, that was the genesis of his business to say, oh, yes, I know a very, very specific group of people and their Navy and their Marine Corps officers that work quite well in the ambiguity and the uncertainty with confidence and then just keep forging ahead. So your question reminded me of that. So yes, I am probably a little bit more comfortable. You know, people often think about the structure of the military. Mm. We spend a lot of our time really in the uncertainty when everybody's looking at us,
yeah.
And it's our decision, and we have to move. And then the other thing I would say about the Navy in particular, uniquely as a service, is there seems to be this assumption in the Navy that any officer can do any job without any training. Like the Navy is like, I've been an intel officer at NATO. Like, what do I know about that? I'm a helicopter pilot. I've been a professor at the university and, you know, while active duty. And I'm like, what do I know about that? I'm a helicopter pilot. Navy doesn't care. They'll throw you into anything and see if you can swim. And I think that gave me the confidence to try something as new as coaching. Mm-hmm. For me, as it was, you know, the 7 years ago. And it wasn't easy. No. There was an important series of transformations that needed to take place in my life around how I showed up for service, my ability to truly hear others, serve others, mm-hmm. show up for others, create space for others, compassion, empathy, my own spiritual and emotional journey all had to be tended to before I was ready to be a coach that helped guide others through transformation.
Yeah, the way you're speaking about empathy, compassion, spirituality, and I may be ignorant, but it feels like this is not military speak. This is not the way that you perhaps would have been taught in the military, or am I wrong there?
No, those aren't terms that we ever use in the military.
Yeah. Is it still quite a, you know, button down, get the job done sort of thing? Is there much progress in the space of not mental health once the damage has been done, but preventive and you know, helping to build people's resilience and prepare for events?
So there's a lot of effort around that.
Okay.
The military is really trying to make strides. And honestly, Alex, all along, the best leaders were emotionally intelligent leaders. Mm. The best leaders felt their own emotions, managed their own emotions, were able to connect with the emotions of others and help focus them. That's universal, right? That's in the military or otherwise. But the training to support leadership development in a holistic or embodied way mm-hmm. hasn't been there historically, even though you can see glimpses of it. If you ever see the Blue Angels, like preparing for a flight, briefing a flight, it's mm-hmm. actually a very, very meditative event, right? It's a very embodied preparation, a visualization exercise. So you see glimpses at the higher end of performance that might look familiar in coaching if you squint just right, but mostly it's a tough enough get the job done.
Yeah.
And there are good reasons for that, right? Because sometimes you just kind of have to toughen up and get the job done because there's no alternative. And we learn to sacrifice maybe important things about ourselves or leave important things about ourselves behind in order to get that job done.
Yeah.
But it's not historically a woo-woo kind of place.
No, well, one of the you know, regular listeners of the podcast, shout out to you, Mum, will know, and the six other people who regularly show up will know that I'm a paradoxical young man because I work in the coaching space, but I'm very critical of it. And one thing that I'm critical of is the fact that people, because of the way that we get our information from, you know, the influences we follow for the most part. And once we start following a certain path, algorithms feed us more of that path.
Yeah.
We end up either following all the hustlers and the grinders and thinking that's the only way to get it done. Ice baths, 4 a.m. workout, 18 hours of work, never stop calling and selling. Or you end up on the other side, which is very intuitive. And, you know, I only work when I feel good about it. And I'm always just, it's all self-care. And I feel like neither of those is a particularly sustainable path. And I think that there's seasons for both of them. And so the military, get the job done, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps vibe. But then also with your new found intuition and trust of, as you said, the universe, what some people might call faith or God or whatever, is a really interesting balance, and probably one that I still haven't figured out for myself yet. So how do you see it in the space of the clients you work with? Because you're working with in sort of more professional leadership and development. So are these upper management type people that you're working with?
Often, yeah. A lot of the time. It's kind of my standard for working with somebody is based on their willingness. Are you somebody who wants to be coached, feels ready to be coached, wants to change? But in that spirit of what I said earlier, look, I'm going to make my money up front. And then and by the way, like I had some of my peer coaches who are even more on the woo-woo side of things than I am are like, yeah. Oh man, you're coaching executives? Like sell out. And I'm like, no, right. Man, you're 5 minutes into your first conversation before that person is bare in front of you and their fears are exposed and their vulnerabilities are surfacing. Yeah. These are human beings just like anybody else. And guess what? They are human beings that are in often positions to make tremendous impact on other people's lives. Mm. So this is actually, to me, a really good place to be coaching. Although I'm shifting my coaching in another direction too. We can talk about that later if time permits. I want to get back to what you're asking, because there's, I think, something really important there to me. I coach people on the thing that's most important to them.
Yeah.
So let's say somebody is on the intuitive side of things, but struggles to move into action. Their topic might simply be to see what needs to be done more quickly and to move into action with more confidence. That might be their 6-month topic. That's the thing that's most important to them. Somebody different who has the strong bias for action, their topic might be to learn to listen to myself and to others so I can create more contemplative and strategic solutions. That might be their topic. Look, out of all the clients I've had, I've never had two topics that were the same.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever is most important to the client is most important to them for a reason. And we'll go a couple of levels below it. Why is that important to you? What will that make possible in your life? What impact will stem from this work? Whatever. But at the end of the day, I think everybody knows, unless they're completely delusional or narcissistic in a clinical way, I think everybody knows where their work lies. And if we can show up as coaches and create that trust and that space to explore that, they'll name it in that first hour and a half conversation. Say, okay, that's my topic. And as soon as they do name it in the coaching that I do, that entire program is now shifted on that azimuth to completion of growth in that area that is most important to them. So in 6 months, they've had this transformation and that thing that they couldn't do before because of the belief systems that lived underneath those behaviors and because of the way of checking that was incomplete was limiting them. They will transcend that. They'll bring the best parts of it with them, right? Because the thing that limits us tends to be the very thing that also serves us. So yep. They'll bring the best parts of that with them, but then they'll have choice in whatever area is most important to them. So if they're out of balance on one side, the program will pull them to more balance.
Okay. So while I have questions about the individuals you're working with, the marketer in me comes out and says, if you, Walt, are helping people with whatever's most important to them, how on earth do you get that message out there when you're promoting yourself? Because it feels like everyone's getting a different product, and obviously it's working. But in what I would always say to people is, listen, bro, I know you can help a lot of people do a lot of things, but what's the offer we're putting out there? And whether usually just in your marketing, it doesn't mean you're pigeonholed to this one style of client, but it's one of my clients is a business coach, you know, and he can really help a lot of businesses with a lot of things. And when we're marketing, though, we just go over helping construction businesses manage their cash flow better. And that's the one thing he does in his marketing. So when you're having that conversation with a prospect, how do you describe what it is that you do in a way that is really a no-brainer for them?
Yeah. So let's assume that the business is going to pay for coaching, right?
Yeah.
Like my favorite clients are out-of-pocket clients, the ones that are so invested in there. They're an easy sell, right? Because you can say directly to them, hey, that thing that you're struggling with, that thing that's bringing you pain, that thing that you'd like to better be able to do, the thing that would allow you to create more impact through your life, mm-hmm. right? That thing that you know is getting in the way. Like in 6 months, you're going to transcend that.
Yeah.
If we work together. And if you don't, I'm going to give you your money back, right? Because I'm in it for the transformation. I'm in it to be your partner in exploration and growth and to support you. And I'm committed to you every step of the way. So for the out of pocket clients, that's a lot easier, right? Because they're the ones dealing with that limitation that they keep bumping against. And they're the ones that feel stuck.
Yeah.
The tougher sell is the business, right? Because there is a corporate sponsor there who is going to pay. Yeah. Well, guess what? That corporate sponsor is also going to be represented by the face of a human being who's going to have their own stuff, who's going to have their own challenges, who's going to have their own biases. And they're going to exist within a culture that also has its own biases. And they're kind of being paid to say, this is what I want that person to better be able to do. So they're going to have a real interest if they're going to fork out thousands of dollars for a coaching program. Yep. They're going to say, this is how I want it to go.
Right.
So this is what I will say to them. The return on investment for you will be highest when you create space and truly invest in the growth of that individual.
Mm.
The return on investment will be highest when you just allow this confidential thing to happen with trust. American University recently did a study that showed the return on investment on coaching is 788%. That's an enormous return on investment.
Wow.
So to best realize that is to really engage in all of the factors that make coaching valuable. Some of them are simply that this person's more likely to be retained.
Yeah.
But I am not here to coach performance. I am here to support the growth and development of this individual. And when you trust us to do that, that's where you'll see your greatest return. And so that's my approach. Not every company is ready for that. I kind of view companies that invest in coaching in kind of three basic categories. Like category lowest in the evolution of things would be fix this person.
Yeah.
The next level up is help this person grow in this particular way. And then the final evolved one, as I experience it, is help this person grow.
Yeah.
This person feels ready to grow. And that's the first question I ask. You know, anytime a company says, hey, will you coach this person? I'm like, well, did they ask to be coached? Right? That's always my first question. I'm not going to coach anybody. You didn't ask to be coached. But ultimately, I believe, and I share with others, that your best return on investment is just to allow them to develop in the way that's most important to them. I remember one of my very, very first clients years ago, the company said, we really want you to work with him on his anger management. And I said, okay, time out. Would it be okay if I just asked him what he wanted to work on? And in a, you know, fiduciary way, I will carry your request into that conversation. So if whatever he wants to work on feels totally misaligned with your, then I'll call a timeout and then we'll have that conversation. But I said, I feel really confident that what he wants to work on will be aligned. But if we allow it to be his choice, then the program will go better. He'll grow more. And so they were kind and they trusted me. So I sat down with this individual. We had our first conversation, and his topic was along the lines of to better inspire commitment rather than drive compliance. And that's what we worked on for the next 6 months. Well, guess what? If there's a true transformation in that individual that starts with the beliefs that live below the behaviors, that anger management is going to get taken care of, right? That's only like that is one of 20 productive behaviors that will emerge simply by listening to that individual rather than listening to the corporate sponsor.
Yeah. The first thing that came to mind when they said, "Will you help this person with his anger management?" was, why is he angry? You know, what are you guys doing? What's the workplace like? You know, that this man so angry.
It's a great question.
Yeah, beautiful. That's really cool, man. It's a very, very different style of sales and marketing and promotion and offers to what we do and to probably what most of my clients do as well in the space is we tell people what is the result they're gonna get from working with us. Yeah. And yours feels a lot more, it's like, what result do you need? Which it's a hugely powerful question, but there's a lot of confidence in asking that one, and having the trust that you can actually help them in that area. And
go ahead. Yeah, can I address that for a second?
Please.
The challenge with that is it could perpetuate a bad culture, okay. Right? When we ask, what is it that you need? That assumes that they know.
Yeah.
And sure. And by coaching people developmentally, it allows for a new awareness, new perspectives, new creativity that transcends the culture of that company. So really, that is the ROI, is allowing individuals to grow beyond the expectations by investing in their truth, their growth, their development. That's what allows the culture and the business to expand. Unless they're Steve Jobs and they're supremely confident in the direction that they're going and understand market forces and everything else so clearly, it's expansive to invest in the growth of the individual. The creativity that will come out of that will transcend the simple business question, what do you need? The answer is you might not know what you need yet.
Yeah.
And we're helping you develop the team that will help you answer that question.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's a very interesting space, self-awareness and that sort of thing. And knowing that when people come to you, I imagine that a wall would come down a lot when they're asking for help themselves rather than their company telling them to come and talk to you. That could be, do people ever feel a bit sort of almost defensive, I suppose, when they are being sent to you by their employer?
Yes.
Right. And
my clients always know where my advocacy lies.
Okay.
Always. And so do the employers. I make that really clear to everybody. Like, I am focused on this human in their development, period. That's what you've hired me to do. And that's where your best return is.
And how do you help the client to, you know, release that that defensiveness and how to, you know, if I make a decision to do something positive, I'm much more likely to do it than if my wife tells me to do it, you know, right. For example, or if I, even to the, you know, the pettiness of if my sister recommends a TV show, I'm like, oh, stop recommending me. I'll watch it later. I think I'm a very stubborn person like that sometimes. And I kind of need to come up with ideas myself. And so I can imagine.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah, please.
I've totally cut you off because I'm wondering if do you need help with that stubbornness? I can help you with that. I can guide you through that.
Let's talk about it, because I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it.
And I was making a joke as a pitch, but I would absolutely be delighted to help you with the stubbornness if it's getting in your way.
It certainly does not in business. In business, I know where I need help. Okay. When it comes to trivial things like, you know, you've got to watch this or you would love this. I'm like, I bet I wouldn't love it. You know, you don't know me, especially in parenting, dude. If I see a mom hacks on Instagram, like, this is the best thing to do with your kid at bedtime, I'm like, you don't know my kid. Get out of here. You know, who are you?
Well, I'm sure that serves you sometimes.
Yes.
So what I heard your question was, I don't want to get too far away from it, is how do I convince that individual that I am their advocate?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it goes kind of the same way. It says, hey, what is the most important area? I go through confidentiality, and I go through ICF standards around that and make sure that they understand. If there is reporting in place, I try to resist that, but sometimes it's inevitable. I'm like, okay, this is what's going to be reported from this coaching program. Nothing is going to go out to any management or leadership without you seeing it first. I'm working for you, and my everything about this program is my investment in you and your growth. Mm. So what is most important for you? What would you like to be able to do better? In what area would you like to grow? Where do you feel stuck? And right away, okay, I'm not saying, hey, this is kind of the expectation of the program. I go right into what's important for you. And then they can feel the control that they have in the program.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So it's kind of a little bit like, you know, I'm on your side here. A little bit like when my, no, I hate to use a reductive example, but when my mom used to tell me off, and then dad would be like, listen, buddy, it's not so bad. You know, you're kind of their friend behind closed doors, but I think I've got that wrong. But yeah, that's really cool. And I can see coaching, especially in the way you're doing it, very intimate relationship. It's very different to you standing in front of the room and coaching the team as a whole. Individual, you're going to learn so much more about that person and your relationship with them. I suppose has to be very transparent and very honest. And I don't get the feeling of honesty and transparency from HR departments at big companies. It all feels very we're doing this to tick boxes and say that we're a good corporation. But once again, this is my skepticism of big companies, I suppose. I don't have much experience in it, so I'm always fascinated by that space.
HR is usually who I'm having conversations with, HR and their direct manager.
Yeah.
And I will usually feel more resistance from HR than I will from the direct manager. But you never know. Sometimes it's just a really pleasant surprise, and you just meet this really wonderful, wonderful, open-minded individual who gets it on the HR side. But it's not always that way. It's more likely that's where the resistance is.
That's interesting, because that's kind of technically their job, right? The well-being and happiness of their staff.
Yes, and I think HR, generally speaking, they have a very, very important function about creating organizational structure.
Okay.
Right. Without them, it would just be kind of willy-nilly, right? So they have an important role.
Yeah.
But if you talk about belief systems, then a kind of organizational, I think, professional, and somebody in HR, you know, I'm going to get hate mail. You're going to get hate mail. So my apologies if I'm getting this completely wrong. But the idea is we can create a structure to fix this. So there's this idea that they are creating structure. That's the value they bring. Imposing that structure is important. So to ask HR to say, no, suspend the structure, give us space with faith, like faith isn't really in the HR vernacular, right?
Sure.
Because they deal in very tangible policy and structure. So asking for space can be a little bit outside expectations.
Yeah, fair enough. And I'm sure you won't get hate mail, firstly, because that's a completely fair enough response. And secondly, because I'm for a fact, no one who works in these positions in these departments is listening to this show right now. So that's great.
In that case, let me tell you the truth about HR.
Please go ahead.
No, I'm joking.
Okay.
that was my polished version.
I love it. The politician's answer. The beauty of these long form conversations is that we can dig into topics where we can show our opinions a little more. And if I think it's therapeutic for us as well as interesting for people to listen. So as we do begin to wrap up this podcast and indeed the year, what are you excited about coming into 2024?
Oh, 2024. The thing I'm excited about is this, I'm feeling something new stirring about kind of my calling and purpose as a coach, and I'm going to continue to coach one-on-one forever.
Yep.
I co-founded a coaching program at the University of Colorado that's connecting CU students with professional certified coaches. In this school year, we'll connect 60 students with professional coaches free of charge to the students. But I'm engaging in that work a little bit with younger clients as well. And this is what I'm finding. And I know we're winding down, so I'll try to make it quick. Okay. But I'll say that the agility of the young person, the neurological pathways that are still open, I just describe them as being unencumbered, right? They're in their 20s. They haven't been beaten down by 30 years of career and the expectations around that. I say that the ruts are a lot more shallow and easier to pop out of. So I'm seeing just these phenomenal, anecdotally speaking, phenomenal results and phenomenal growth with these younger clients that I'm sometimes coaching as part of my lower fee work. And it occurs to me that if we shift our expectations around kind of the privilege of coaching and who gets to get coached to something younger, if we begin either organizationally or societally, start investing in the leadership development at younger and younger ages, what that will allow for is to change that leadership trajectory of a young person and longitudinally over time, create more impact. And kind of my mission, I think, in life is to build this shared leadership capacity that allows us to expand our understanding of what leadership is, to identify more strongly as leaders who can make impact, and to face these myriad of challenges that we have inherited that are to me sometimes just terrifying. Like, we have to be doing something about this, and we're talking about the wrong thing and completely. When we build sufficient shared leadership capacity, I believe we will begin talking about the right things and addressing them meaningfully. And I think the path to get there is to start coaching people younger. So that's the thing I'm most excited about in 2024. How do we start reaching younger people and investing in their growth so that we can begin addressing these things with more earnestly?
Wow, that's a really cool idea, man. Really cool idea. And not something I guess most people would think of, because doing things for free is not profitable. We're all just trying to make our own way. So that's really, really cool that you've found that path. I think it sounds extremely useful. I know for sure that I could have used that help in my late teens, early 20s, like these university students. And I think a lot of people I know from those days could be in a lot better position in their life, not just financially, but just, you know, with health, relationships and everything else, yes, had they yeah, had they been presented with that opportunity, because obviously not everyone has the best, you know, circumstances at home. And that style of mentorship, that is, yeah, directed intentional mentorship and coaching. That sounds really interesting, man. So what's the name of the organization?
So the for the students?
Yeah.
It's the CU Center for Leadership. So that's at the University of Colorado. But if you Google CU Center for Leadership, but you have to spell it the American way, C-E-N-T-E-R, yeah, for leadership. Sontra won't get you there, I don't think. So CU Center for Leadership. And then under programs, you can find the coaching program there. And you'll see the list of all of our coaches. I'm listed among the coaches. But we have, I think, 17 professional coaches that are so wonderful and making such a difference in these students' lives and their development.
I love it, man. I love to hear that stuff. And it gives me, you know, ideas that maybe someday in the future to do that sort of thing myself, help younger people, is a really cool idea. So you've certainly helped me today. I've seen things in different lights than I was expecting to walking in, and you've opened my eyes to a world I don't know too much about, which is really, really cool. And you're a very thoughtful, insightful, and calm person to talk to. So I thank you for that, because I can be a bit over the top sometimes. So, Walt, I really hope you've enjoyed your time on the show here today.
Yeah, I absolutely have. And maybe in our next conversation, we can get into the helicopter stuff, and I can tell you some scary shipboard stories.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Well, the problem is if we started off with that, we would never have gotten off it. Because so I wanted to challenge myself to learn, instead of just fanboying over your helicopter stuff. Because, yeah, the branch of the military I applied for was Air Force when I was, you know, multiple times. And I had asthma, and then I had flat feet, and then I had a fractured vertebrae, and all sorts of reasons why I just could not do it over and over again. And yeah, I ended up going into cooking, which was the closest thing to a military environment I could find at the time, in fine dining kitchens, you know, getting shouted at by tough men in loud environments. So
yeah,
but that's for another day.
No, that's a fascinating conversation, because I think what many people do view is the military environment is more likely to be found in a kitchen than it is in the actual military.
Interesting. Well, there's a lot of ego. There's a lot of people. I think there's a lot of guys and ladies, but mostly men for that matter, who have found themselves, you know, they've worked their way up in kitchens, and now they're in their 40s and they've found that's not it. Mm. That's not it. But now they can't go anywhere else. So they just treat their staff the way that their head chefs treated them. And it's a self-perpetuating cycle. It's just anger and stress, whereas the best chefs in the world are actually super calm, and the best restaurants in the world are digging more into leadership and the kind of thing you're talking about. And a lot of that angry environment is getting pretty outdated now. And so, which is nice to see as well. So some of the best people in the world, your Rene Redzepi over in Noma, that was number one in the world for a long time. You're Massimo Bottura and Osteria Francescana in Italy, and even Heston Blumenthal is super famous in England. I've seen talks from all three of these guys about their leadership style, and one of them basically saying, you don't seem to get angry, and Heston saying, if I've given you something and you've stuffed it up, that's because either I've given you a job you're not ready for, or I haven't trained you sufficiently to do it. So that's on me. Yeah. That's not on you. I was there in person. Everyone applauded for that, because that's not the way that kitchens generally think. And so, yeah, even seeing a progression in leadership and empathy and accountability from leaders in kitchens is getting, I think that's progressing faster than we notice as well. So what you're doing, man, it's important in every industry. And I think that, now that mental health's more of a conversation, and people's satisfaction with work is very fleeting, then helping leaders develop is super important. And so starting that off with college kids and helping them start early rather than just learning what not to do is, I can't think of a better initiative.
Yeah, thank you.
So sorry to go on a little. I said we're finishing, then I go on a 5-minute rant about kitchen leadership. But
no, I enjoyed that. That was really interesting to hear, especially from your perspective.
Cool, man. Well, I've had my fair share of stuff thrown at me by bad head chefs, and I've had good head chefs who have really helped me progress my life, and even told me when is the right time to move on from a place because it wasn't the right environment for me. Not firing me, but saying, you know, this isn't right for you. You're not right for us, which is awesome. So, Walt, really, really enjoyed talking to you today, mate. And we had some great small talk before the show started. Mutual appreciation of each other's environments. I love the mountains of Colorado. And you like the beaches of Sydney. And hopefully, one day I'll get back over there, and you'll get back over here.
Let's go skiing at Steamboat sometime.
All right, no worries. I'll see if I can borrow $30,000 from someone to do that. That is not a cheap exercise coming from Australia to Colorado. But one day we'll get there again, mate. It's on the bucket list. Take my family to Steamboat.
So, perfect.
Dude, thank you so much, Walt. And anyone listening, this has been Walt Morgan. And you can find Walt. I've closed up your website. Can you please just say it again, Walt? Because I have it on my screen. Yeah.
So my website, my business website is tliftcoaching.com. The letter T, LIFT coaching.com. And there's a contact button there. If you'd like to reach out with me, I'm happy to have a conversation around leadership development, integral coaching, team coaching, AI-free coaching, which is another topic for another time.
I saw that. And that was something that I wanted to dig into and didn't, because as I'm sure you figured out, my mind goes where it goes and the podcast has to come with it. So Walt, thank you so much, mate. If you are listening to this one, we love you for that. I'll be back next week with another couple episodes of Coaches to the Moon. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Much love and peace out. Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end. If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials, you can follow them, you can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.